Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 13th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason for this last trading day of the week. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He, of course, is at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, another mad cow in Canada. More on that in a moment. And then later, Dave Dickey will be along with the news on the WTO negotiations, where the U.S. says it may withdraw its current offer, and the European Union says there is no good reason to maintain a ban on 5 GMO food products. Well, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and in between, I'll update you on the Danforth Plant Sciences Center in St. Louis. It was established late in the last century to anchor what many hoped would become a biotechnology mecca in the Midwest. That all happens on this Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this for the wheat at 456.5, down 5.75 today. May futures in Chicago on this 13th of April, 357.5, down 3. July futures down 3.25 at 371.25. May contract in the corn pit, 236.25, down 3/4. July futures at 248.5, down 0.25. And September's at 257.5, down 0.5. December corn futures, 268.5, down 3/4 for the day. May soybeans down 563, 2.5 higher. July futures at 577.5, up 2.75. And the August contract at 582.5, up 2 cents for the day. November beans, 2.25 higher at 596.25. Soybean meal at 173.40, up 1.50. Soybean oil at 22.56. They were off 8 for the day. Feeder cattle at the Mercantile Exchange, 102, 17.5, 82.5 cents higher. Live cattle at 81, 87.5, up 12.5 cents. And the lean hogs at 54, 22.5 were down 12.5 for the day. A quick note on that Canadian cow. This is what we have from the latest. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency says a 6-year-old cow in British Columbia is likely positive for BSE. Final confirmatory tests are pending. Significantly, the cow in question appears to have been born 2 years after Canada implemented a comprehensive ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban. The CFIA held a teleconference at 12:15 today, and we may have some audio from that later in the program yet for this afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me what things are like in Chicago as we head into the planting season for corn.
Well, I think half the people probably took the day off. Trade volume was terribly light, very, very light. So I think most of the activity was all pretty well done here Monday through Wednesday. And I think with the nice weather out, everybody decided to take a 4-day weekend, and that seems to kind of be the case. I think the active planting weather for corn, or the talk that planters are out rolling in the Midwest, that weighed on corn through most of the session, but you know, at the end here, we only ended up with some fractional losses. That kind of put the brakes on that pretty steep decline that we had in the market there yesterday. I think soybeans are finding support kind of from the opposite, I think, of corn. If the corn planters are rolling this early, that kind of increases the chances that USDA's corn planting number is going to grow and the soybean number is going to shrink. So that kind of offers some underlying support to the bean complex, as well as you know, we've just seen a steady decline in the South American crop production numbers now, to the point where the crop may not be a whole lot larger than last year. So, you know, that kind of fuel speculation that our export demand pace here probably this spring and summer may be a lot stronger than what the market had kind of been anticipating here over the past couple months.
Your cyclic analysis points to what in the corn pit?
I'm kind of in the mode here that the corn market still may have a week or two to go to the upside in here, or kind of hold together until it kind of sees a planted crop or visualizes one. We did post or trace out a weekly reversal down on the corn market, which I think is a strong signal that maybe the corn market has done all it needs to do for now to buy those additional acres that the market was wanting to be done, especially if some of these distant weather models are correct and keeping everything kind of warm and dry. So I do think that the corn market is signaling that it may be running out of momentum. Seasonally, if you look at average price studies, corn often makes this high during the first week of April and then steadily declines, and we'll have to kind of wait and see whether or not that kind of plays out. But I've got some weekly cyclical work that kind of keeps the market at least in position to rally on into late April, maybe possibly early May.
You're not inclined to feel like the gap will be filled anytime soon?
Well, I think if you close the gap, I don't think that would be a very good omen for May price strength. Let's put it this way. I think that gap needs to stay open in order to keep the technical momentum moving to the upside.
Okay, so you're not sure yet as to whether it'll come back and fill that gap, but at least at the moment for this week it has not, although there is a technical turn down in the corn pit. How about for the beans?
Beans, kind of the opposite. I think one can kind of be friendly to the soybean market based upon this week's price action. We did go down underneath last week's low there on Monday, and then we've been able to come back, and we ended up closing higher for the week, put a weekly reversal to the upside on the bean complex, and I think that fits in real well with some of my longer-term weekly cyclical work that indicates that the bean market now is at least in position to maybe go against what it's been doing here over the last few months here, basically sideways to lower type thing, shift this thing into a sideways to higher trend shift.
There was some talk at one point that I read, and I don't recall exactly where, that some of the outside market was really beginning to think of corn as an energy hedge. Give any credence to that?
Well, I don't know if I want to use this, go quite that far as an energy hedge. I think you have to say that corn has an energy component in it, with, you know, a production of 10 or 11 billion bushels, depending upon whatever yield you want to put on it. You know, we're looking at using 2 billion or 20% of our corn crop as a form of an energy source. So it does have an energy component in it. I'm not too sure that would be strong enough to be called an energy hedge, but in this type of environment, you probably about likely hear anything, but there is no doubt about it that part of the rally that we have seen in corn is based upon the price strength that we've seen in the energy market, because we are going to use approximately 20% of our production as a form of energy. So price of energy does have an impact in the price of corn.
Mercantile Exchange seems to have taken the news out of Canada that they have a potential BSE positive 6-year-old cow in great stride, as that came out before the close of the day.
Well, we're always concerned when we hear about mad cow and confirmed cases of this or non-confirmed or inconclusive cases of that. It may be getting to the point where it's getting a little bit old. I guess the thing that we have to really worry about is how the market may take news that it has entered the food chain. I suppose that's the big fear. But I think the these reports that we're hearing that we're spotting everything before it goes to slaughter, I think is you know, at least so far so good, and I think the market's able to kind of shake that stuff off. But the worry is at some point in time that may not happen, and that's what's really scary.
You're the last analyst for the regular business days of the week. Any final word?
No, just other than I know the farming season's begun. I know everybody's going to want to put in some long hours, and I would just say be a little careful. Try to be as safe as possible, and get plenty of rest.
Thanks much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a look at the ag weather. Our own Mike Sola forecast for tonight across the two-state region says in the northern and central sections, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. There'll be some scattered showers and thunderstorms in the south, partly cloudy as well. Lows ranging from 53 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 66 in the far south. Tomorrow, Mike says, in the north and central sections, partly to mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms, most numerous in the afternoon. In the south, partly sunny. The highs tomorrow from 76 in northeastern Indiana to 88 in southwestern Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. agricultural negotiator Richard Crowder says the government may withdraw its offer at the Doha Round unless other nations present similar plans to reform world ag trade. Speaking yesterday at a seminar in Washington, D.C., Crowder said, in his words, "Without something more meaningful on market access, it will be difficult even to keep our current offer on the table."
We're very concerned about the April 30th. Deadline in terms of having full modality. So, but I think that gives you an assessment of the odds. I don't want to put a number on it because it's kind of a binomial outcome. It's going to either happen or not happen, but we're concerned about that. But we'll see how far we get this week.
American Soybean Association President Bob Metz was at the Washington, D.C. seminar. Metz says optimism is slowly dying away that WTO negotiators will agree on agriculture.
I had dinner last night with Secretary of Ag Mike Johanns, and he's been right in the middle of it, and he didn't seem like things were moving ahead very quickly. And as I said, other countries just continue to ask for more without offering up anything.
Crowder will be in Geneva next week for what figures to be the final negotiating meeting before an April 30th deadline to agree on tariff and subsidy reductions. The European Union's Food Safety Agency says there is no health or environmental reason for five EU nations to keep in place a ban on the use of five genetically altered crops and food products cleared for use. France, Luxembourg, Germany, Greece, and Austria instituted national bans on the GMO products between 1997 and 2000. Yesterday, the EU called for tougher rules on approving GMOs, including requiring the Food Safety Authority to justify safety concerns voiced by EU members. The U.S., Canada, Australia, and others are saying the EU is violating world trade rules by trying to block imports of such products into Europe. The U.S. and Peru have signed a free trade agreement. The deal with Peru gives U.S. agriculture significant new market access to a South American market of some 28 million people. American Farm Bureau trade specialist Chris Garza says that translates into a win for all of U.S. agriculture.
As we look at the U.S.-Peru trade promotion agreement, what we basically see is that overall, this is a good agreement for U.S. agriculture, for all sectors of U.S. agriculture. We could basically see, potentially after full implementation, about $700 million per year in increased trade.
Analysis by Iowa State University shows live hog prices could increase by 83 cents per head once the agreement is fully phased in. The U.S. Congress and Peru's government must still ratify the free trade agreement. Chinese officials have announced that they will provide grain farmers with $3.34 billion in direct subsidies for diesel, oil, fertilizer, and pesticides in 2006, about double the amount they received in 2005. The Chinese Ministry of Finance says the increase was intended to offset recent price rises for diesel fuel and other farm production items. The National Grains and Feed Association is concerned about a proposal that will allow smaller railroads to shut down tracks by simply notifying the Federal Surface Transportation Board instead of using the current longer notification process. The NGFA is worried about the effects closing short-line railroads will have on grain elevators and, in turn, farmers doing business with those elevators. And Tyson Foods plans to appeal a $9.2 million federal jury award against the company and two other major meat packers. An eight-member jury found Tyson, Cargill Meat Solutions XL, and Swift & Company intentionally underpaid cattle producers on the live cattle market in the spring of 2001, violating the Federal Packers and Stockyards Act. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center anchors biotechnology in the Midwest. I'll report on the roots of this collaborative research center and its mission to feed the people of the world. It was 1998 when former President Jimmy Carter delivered the keynote address in St. Louis, launching plans for the Danforth Center. The president said, "As we stand on the brink of the millennium, there's no greater challenge ahead than to feed the world's population and to ensure the health of our children, and to accomplish that without further degradation of the earth that sustains us." Well, 3 years later, in 2001, the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center opened in St. Louis. It was built in part by financial gifts from the Danforth Foundation, the Monsanto Fund, that's a philanthropic foundation, and a tax cut from the state of Missouri. The center works in alliance with the University of Illinois, the University of Missouri, Purdue University, Washington University, St. Louis, and the Missouri Botanical Garden. This alliance allows scientists and students at these academic institutions to cooperate across traditional boundaries, like state and national lines. Cassava Research says the Danforth Plant Science Center's Director of Public Relations, Rob Rose, is one of the early success stories. Rose says this research echoes Jimmy Carter's call to the aid of the poorest nations of the globe.
Poverty in Africa is a big deal, and I think globally you see countries marshaling resources to address not only health issues there, but poverty reduction and giving people the opportunity to plant more food so they can increase their food production is really going to be a big deal.
The root of the cassava tree is consumed in many tropical areas of the world. Danforth Center research on cassava is just one of dozens. Many are rooted in the cultural practices of the Midwest, where farmers grow corn, soybeans, and wheat. The research focuses on four primary areas: developing new materials and products from plants, adapting plants for environmental stresses, enriching the nutritional value of foods, and controlling plant pests and pathogens. Well, the Danforth Center was established in part to anchor biotechnology in the Midwest. As a not-for-profit collaborative scientific research facility, Rose says its biggest success so far may be gathering and garnering acceptance of biotechnology around the globe.
I think the biggest success that we've had really has been the PhDs, the visiting PhDs, the postdocs that have come to the Danforth Center. They have actually come from over 20 different countries, and they come to the center for 2, 3, 4 years at a time, and then they go back to their homeland, they go back to their home country that sponsored them, and they take the knowledge that they've learned, and they bring that to their country. So I think that is a huge success. I think that transference of knowledge helps to further the biotechnology industry, because it builds acceptance and understanding. It's no longer this black box of concern. I think that's been a huge benefit, not only to St. Louis, but I think also to the biotech industry as a whole.
The Danforth Center, in its first 5 years of operation, produced more than 150 peer-reviewed white papers and has applied for and received a number of U.S. patents. It is one of the reasons Rob Rose believes the stated goal in 1998 of making the Midwest a mecca for biotechnology by establishing the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center has been reached. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
On this Thursday afternoon, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, located at the elevator in Lexington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Beautiful day.
Anybody yes, it
out,
is.
Anybody out in the field on these 83-degree temperatures?
Yeah, there's people out there doing some spraying, getting some ground worked. I think there's a few planters going. I haven't confirmed that, but I wouldn't be surprised that we wouldn't see some on the way home tonight.
Now, what are they telling you about the tilth of the soil and the condition of it in terms of soil moisture?
Really good shape up here. It sounds like things are working up real nice. It's a little bit, you know, drier up here than what it is to the south. But the topsoil has, you know, gotten some moisture back in it, and it seemed like pretty good conditions from what I hear.
Now, that's a good start to the planting season, and hopefully it will mean a good harvest and bountiful harvest by the time we get to this fall. Tell me about the cash grain market in your area.
Well, really, this past week we've seen the corn just firm, not a little bit better, especially on the river, maybe 1 to 3 better on the river. The bean base has really kind of gotten going pretty good here the last week or so. We've seen some of the processor bids around 5 cents better, and the river bids up in that 6 to 8, 9 cents better. So just nothing happening in the bean market. I mean, there's just not much cash moving from the farmer side of things.
And you think they'll be long-term holders now until after the planting season, or will they move some beans out?
Yeah, I think till after the planting season, their focus will be away from selling grain and on what it should be, which is the planting.
And same thing for corn?
Yeah, and I think we'll see, depending on what the futures prices, you know, since the report have kind of done some work here to keep the corn moving. But if that changes, we could see the corn basis come in fairly quickly, I think.
Your bids for the day are?
On the cash corn, 214, cash beans, 535.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Bill joins us on Thursday afternoons each and every week here on the Closing Market Report. In about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with ag meteorologist Peter Levitt. In just a moment, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Democrats trying to craft a new Illinois state budget on their own say it's a series of little hurdles and not a big stumbling block that must be cleared to wrap up the legislature's spring session. Lawmakers blew past their scheduled April 7th adjournment and now are likely not to be done until early May because of holidays and previously scheduled vacations. Democratic negotiators and leaders are remaining tight-lipped about many budget details, fearing leaks could jeopardize a deal. But they say the general outline of the budget appears to be in place. Now they're trying to sort out some final sticking points. A biennial headcount found slightly fewer homeless people in Champaign County than a similar count 2 years ago, but more of the homeless are families with children. A group of agencies that serve the homeless says the survey provides justification for federal funding. It used agency records and volunteers patrolling the streets to find 308 homeless people in the county in 1 week in January, with all but 13 having some kind of temporary shelter. Indiana's Secretary of State, Todd Rokita, says he'll hold hearings on problems with new voting machines from a Nebraska company. Several counties, including Marion, the state's largest, have reported technical problems with the election systems and software machines before next month's primary election. Mobile trailers with speed tracking equipment are among the newest ways that Champaign police will analyze traffic patterns in the city and answer some ongoing concerns. The trailers contain software to monitor other traffic statistics as well. Officers expect the monitoring will start this month and result in increased enforcement where it's needed. State health officials are reporting 24 confirmed cases of the mumps in Illinois so far this year. They say that's about twice the normal rate. Another 22 reports are considered probable cases. Usually the state health department gets about 12 or 13 confirmed cases of mumps a year. Health officials in Iowa are battling the first mumps epidemic in the U.S. in 20 years, with more than 500 suspected cases having been reported there. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's a Thursday afternoon, April the 13th, 2006. Just a reminder that you can pick up all of the ag programming on WILL's homepage for agriculture at WILLAG.org. If you miss the futures segment or the cash grain segment, or you want to go back and pick up a commodity week that may have been recorded earlier in the month, or last year even, you can find all of that at WILLAG.org. And don't forget, you can also subscribe to our weekend newsletter. By the way, this is the last trading day of the week, so Commodity Week, which we normally record on Friday afternoons at 4:30, will be recorded this afternoon at 4:30, and it should be up and available on the website by about 6 o'clock tonight. You can pick it up off our website as well. Again, the address is WILLAG.org. Joining us now on this Thursday to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather is Pete Levitt, meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the ag weather across the globe, please.
Well, okay, let's start locally. We can look at a really nice warm day in prospect here across the Midwest. Tomorrow, even a little bit warmer, temperature well up in the 80s. Then a cold front comes along on Saturday afternoon and evening. Showers, thunderstorms, maybe some more severe thunderstorms, especially in the eastern Corn Belt states, and then turning cooler again. And with those weekend showers probably just occurring from midday Saturday through midday Sunday, it looks like the rest of the period will be mostly fair in the southern half of the belt and cloudy with occasional showers at times early next week in northern areas. Southern Plains winter wheat belt is still the area of concern because they've been so dry. They've only had one major rain since the first of the year, about a week or so, that took place late last month. We haven't seen much this month. We have a chance of getting some rain in there on Saturday. It looks like most of it's going to be in the eastern Corn Belt, and then it'll move on off, and we'll see dry weather the balance of the week. So we don't see any relief from the dryness, which is really serious in the Southern Plains hard winter wheat belt. Elsewhere in the world, South American weather is benign for the most part now. We don't see any problems with the finishing up of crops down there. Over in Europe, it's been very wet in Eastern Europe and Western Soviet Union. Some flooding, as we've heard in the news, along the Danube and the Upper Rhine River valleys. A little bit too wet to do any spring work at all, but Western Europe's moisture is adequate to a little surplus. No problems there. They've had abundant moisture in most of the Western Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, what comprises those areas. And that weather looks okay. So really the trouble spots, if we have to look at an ag one and one that's in the immediate future, is right here in the U.S. where we have that dryness in the Southern Plains wheat belt and we're going to have abundant rain in the Midwest, which will slow planting activities in the eastern Corn Belt.
I haven't spoken to you since you returned from Egypt. Glad you made it back safely, and I hope that you had a good time there.
Yes, we had a wonderful time. The weather during the total eclipse was perfectly clear, which is exactly what you want. It was a beautiful eclipse. And we had a wonderful trip looking at all the antiquities which populate the length of the Nile River, practically down to Aswan. A wonderful trip. We'd recommend seeing it for those attractions. We wouldn't recommend the food, though. I'm beginning to understand why you never heard of an Egyptian restaurant in the United States.
Thanks much, Pete. We'll talk to you later.
Right.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. And that is the CMR for the April the 13th of this 2006 year. Don't forget to tune in at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week this Saturday, and that the markets are closed. No ag programming tomorrow here on WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.